This is PhotoBizX episode number 332, and today we're talking underwater photography with a photographer who has built a business that allows him to be creative, make an income, travel, and live the kind of life he wants to be living. I'm talking about Brett Stanley, and that interview is coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the PhotoBiz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. This one has been a long time coming. I've been waiting to interview an underwater photographer, especially after I've heard the request from premium members in the past. So I have to say a big thanks to Katie Roberto for recommending Brett Stanley for today's interview. I know you're going to love what Brett has to share. Before we get into that, I usually share a little bit about me and my week and what's been happening in my world before we jump into the podcast proper. Last week, I was thinking about the fact the main focus of PhotoBizX is lead generation, sales, how to create a successful photography business. You know, we really are focused on the business side of things with this podcast, which I love. I totally love that. But what worries me is that we sometimes forget just how lucky we are to be able to do something that we love and get paid for it. I mean, how cool is it to be employed or commissioned, paid by someone to use our creative skills, our technical skills, to produce something from nothing? Yeah, it still blows me away today that I've been able to forge out a living by being creative, by being good at what I do and good at what I love to do as well. I mean, how lucky are we to be living the kind of life where we get paid to create and to do what we love? So, so cool. And yes, you could argue on the other hand that, well, you know what, our clients are just as lucky as we are. And that is true. That is true. And that that point was driven home to me at the same time that I was thinking about how lucky I am as a photographer. And I'm sure you've had the same thoughts as well. And I hope you have, about how lucky you are to be able to do what you do for a living. And maybe you're not quite there yet. Maybe you're still working towards making that living. Either way, no matter how much income or how little income you're making right now from your photography, it's pretty damn special to get paid to create. But like I said, I was reminded of being on the other side just this week when I was thinking about this topic, because there was a delivery just the other day, and the delivery was a tube, and I didn't know who the delivery was from. It was addressed to Linda and I. So we opened up this tube, and inside was a lovely card and a photo, and it's about a 16 by 20 inch photograph, and it was taken by a friend of mine and listener and premium member, tour guide, accommodation provider, Darren Lehane from London, who Linda and I stayed with while visiting the UK earlier this year. And this photograph is not only in the style, the street photography style that Darren shoots, which always incorporates some humor, some storytelling, and multiple facets that draw you into the image. This particular photo had something else. It had Linda and I in the frame. And it's strange, but as much as I love photography, it was so nice, or it is so nice, to actually be featured. Well, I wouldn't even say featured, to appear in this street photography scene. And I'm going to have an example of this photo that Darren kindly gifted us in the show notes for today's episode, so you can scroll down and have a look at that. But it's a street scene in London on what had to be one of the hottest days in London. Darren was playing the perfect tour guide, showing us around his beautiful city. It was lunchtime. We were walking around the city between the monuments and tourist attractions of London. And outside one of these monuments was this beautiful grass field, and it was filled with business people having lunch beside this fantastic fountain, I guess is the best way to describe it. And inside the fountain was a guy taking a bath. Actually, there was two guys taking a bath, splashing around, having the time of their life on this hot summer's day in London, much to the amusement of everyone having their lunch and to us as tourists. And Darren captured the scene, which, like I said, has humour, has all these different layers, and features both Linda and I in the frame at the same time. So as, I guess, you know, I'm not really a client, but as a client would feel if they were receiving a photo like this from a professional photographer, I can appreciate how nice it is to actually appear in a photograph and how special it is to actually have that photograph in print. So that print that Darren sent us is going off to the framers. It'll be hanging, I'm not sure where in the house, could be in my office, in my studio, maybe somewhere else in the home. But I love the fact that I received this wonderful gift from Darren that is the perfect reminder of a great time away. And at the same time, it's not just a holiday snap. It's street photography art that Linda and I feature in. Yeah, there's something special about it. So if you haven't taken a moment to pause and give yourself a break from the business side of your photography and just think about how lucky we are to get paid for what we do, and at the same time, how lucky our clients are to have us producing the kind of work that we do for them. And this is really, it's a beautiful industry, isn't it? I mean, how lucky are we? How lucky are our clients? I hope that if nothing else, you just take a minute to reflect on your photography, what you do, what it means to you, and how special it is that we get to do what we do.
And now, a macro look at the last episode.
In last week's episode, I interviewed Nick Church from the UK, and Nick was able to replace his day job income, which is a very good income, with his photography in just a short couple of years. In that interview, he explains exactly how he did it, what he's doing to generate the leads, how he's structuring his price list. We go into detail on his very basic, I would call them basic, Facebook ads, why they work so well, why his ideal clients are responding to those Facebook ads and not booking his cheapest package, or hardly ever. Most are going for the middle or top packages that he offers, even though they've come in via a special offer on Facebook. We go into more detail about other parts of his business. It's all in that interview with Nick Church. Get back and have a listen to that one if you're looking at leaving your full-time day job or looking to replace your income even faster than you may have thought possible.
You're listening to Photo Biz Exposed with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Alrighty, we're going to jump into this interview with underwater photographer Brett Stanley in just a second. If you are hearing this announcement, it does mean you are listening to the free podcast episode, and that means you will only be hearing about half, maybe a little bit more than half of the interview that I recorded with Brett. I do save a large portion of the second half for premium members only. And in this particular interview with Brett, I'm saving the parts of the interview where we go into detail about his shooting techniques to get the kind of imagery that he does, his little tips and tricks. We go deeper into the business side of things, his pricing, why he doesn't deliver prints and focuses on online sales. So if you love what you're hearing from Brett in the first half of this interview, if you have ever entertained even slightly the idea of introducing underwater photography, or maybe creating the kind of photography business that allows you to do all the things that you hear Brett talking about, travel, being more creative, getting paid to use your imagination, to be commissioned to shoot around the world. If you like all those aspects, tune in and listen to the full interview with Brett Stanley today. Now, to do that, you can pay as little as $1 with a trial membership. Head over to photobizx.com/try. And for $1, you can access a 30-day trial membership. It'll give you full access to today's interview with Brett. You can access the full back catalog, including the incredible interview with past guests like Sue Bryce, Bert Waristi, Gabe McClintock, Jonas Peterson, Peter Hurley, and so many other photographers. photobizx.com/try for that $1 trial membership. Give it a go. And if you're anything like the 1,000 or so other premium members, other photographers that are premium members, you will love your membership and what you get out of it.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Today's guest started his underwater portrait photography business about 6 years ago after being a land-based photographer for 4 years prior. After launching the underwater photography business, some of his images went viral and the underwater pole dancers and circus performers became well-known, which really brought him into the spotlight. Since then, he's been working with people all over the world, teaching them how to pose and look amazing underwater while creating beautiful, unique images for them. He says, an underwater photo shoot with me is more than just sitting in front of a camera and smiling. It's about stepping out of your comfort zone into a weightless world where the simplest movements can look amazing. Most people are surprised to learn that a large portion of his incredible underwater work features normal, regular people. They're not models or anyone with underwater experience. He's based in the US. He's originally from Australia, not far from where I live, in fact. I'm talking about Brett Stanley, and I'm rapt to have him with us now. Brett, welcome, mate.
Thank you. Yeah, nice to be here.
Mate, let's start by you sharing how you went from the central coast of Australia to end up being in Los Angeles shooting underwater photography.
Wow, yeah, it's actually, to kind of make a long story short, so I haven't lived in Australia for nearly 16 years. And so where I grew up on the Central Coast, I ended up moving to Sydney, which was kind of your 18-year-old kind of transition to go to the big smoke. And then from there, I went down to Melbourne and met a girlfriend there. And then she got a job in New Zealand. So we went to New Zealand for 12 months. I stayed there for 10 years. And there I met my now wife, Jamie Lee, who's a Kiwi, and she won a green card in the American visa lottery, and she works in the film industry, so we decided to move to the United States, and Hollywood was kind of where we ended up.
It's amazing.
Yeah, so that was kind of tiring just thinking about it, but that was 16 years ago, and within that time, I've kind of gone from being a web programmer, so I was building websites when I was living in New Zealand, and started to get into photography a bit there, and then kind of got more and more into it and ended up kind of quitting my job programming and becoming a full-time photographer, doing portraiture and commercial advertising work and some fashion stuff. And then kind of spent a few years doing that in New Zealand, but it's such a small market that it's, you kind of got a lot of competition basically to kind of get the big contracts and the good work. And I was trying to think of a way that I could kind of separate myself from the pack and do something a little bit different. And water has always been my happy place. And so I started shooting underwater, thinking it would just be a short kind of little thing that would be fun for a while. And yeah, it kind of took off. And 6 years later, there's no looking back. This is what I want to keep doing for the rest of my career.
Fantastic, mate. I want to ask you all about the underwater stuff and getting started down that road. But you mentioned Jamie Lee won a green card. Is that a rare thing? And the reason I ask is I've interviewed another photographer who also won a green card, which I thought was incredible.
Yeah, it's not that rare. The United States gives out, I think, about 80,000 green cards every year. But you can only enter the lottery if you're a country that's a part of that system or whatever. Then you've got an agreement with certain countries. So I know that people in the UK can't enter the lottery, whereas people in Mexico and New Zealand and Australia and that sort of stuff can enter. And it's purely just it's free. You just sign up. And if you get your number pulled out of the hat, then it's not a guaranteed green card, but you are then allowed to apply for one. So you still have to go through the screening process and all that sort of stuff.
Right. But you pretty much have to uproot and get over there within the next 12 months, don't you? And you have to basically set up home.
Yeah, pretty much. So we quite quickly got married. So then she could sponsor me to come over as well. And for the first year, I didn't have a green card. So I was kind of basically being a tourist visa in and out every 3 months. Whereas Jamie kind of, she was legit and she, hit the ground kind of running here. But I think from when she got her green card to when we left was 6 months.
Wow. Okay. So then your green card comes in, you're shooting photography professionally. And, you take this transition to underwater photography. Just talk about that transition. Were you trialing it with a view to making it your livelihood, or was it just playing around in the beginning?
It was kind of just playing around. I was kind of getting a little bit bored with the style of photography I was doing. I wasn't kind of being innovative. it was kind of pretty cookie cutter sort of stuff. And I'm the kind of person that needs to keep creating. Like I like to build my own equipment. I like the problem solving aspect of photography. Even when it comes to shooting, I like the problem solving of working out how to light something. And I was feeling pretty stagnant with where I was. And so, and I think I was going through a storage unit. I found my old underwater camera for when I was, you know, sort of early 20s. And just started to play with it. And the more I played with it, the more I could see things that I wanted to do with it. But I couldn't with the equipment I had. So I kind of started building some equipment to be able to control lights underwater and to take my dry strobes and take them underwater and to try and replicate my lighting style above and take that underwater as well. And it just started as a bit of an experiment, really, just to see what would happen. And as you kind of mentioned, you know, some of my images kind of went viral and the response was huge, which I wasn't really expecting. And so once that sort of kicked off, then people were like, oh, I want a picture of me like that. And so my little lizard brain went, oh, this is a business. And so I kind of transitioned from chasing corporate headshot accounts and those sorts of contracts to taking photos of everyday people, like a portrait studio, but it's all underwater.
Mm-hmm. So back then, when you made that transition, as your images went viral, the underwater images, were you already profitable as a photographer?
I was in this weird kind of stage. So going back a little bit, I was a wedding photographer in New Zealand as well as doing the commercial work. So the weddings were great but very seasonable in New Zealand because the weather's pretty crappy. And from that, I started up a photo booth business. So that business ended up taking off more than my photography was. So the last couple of years I was in New Zealand, I had a photo booth business that was kind of supporting me. So that was my living wage coming from that business. And the photography was kind of money for GM on top of that. So when I moved to the States, and the underwater and the moving to the States just happened to be at the same time.
Oh, okay, right.
Just coincidentally. So the business side of it, I wasn't doing any paid work in the States because I couldn't because I was not a legal resident.
Holiday visa, right.
Yeah. So no work here, but my photo booth business was supporting me back home. And I'd have to go home every 3 months for about a month to come back so that they didn't start to get suspicious or anything. So when I'd go back for that month, I'd try and line up some photo shoots when I went back. So to start with, my underwater work was more in New Zealand than it was in the States, even though this is where I was living.
Okay. So where were you when the images went viral? You were between both countries or were you in New Zealand?
I was physically in the States when it went viral, but they were all photos I'd taken in New Zealand.
Right, okay. So then I'm guessing then, like you said, your lizard brain started tweaking and twitching. I guess your thought was, how can I monetize this? Am I correct?
Yeah, totally. And that's pretty much my whole business style is trying to find one little thing that's cool or that's different and then trying to monetize it, trying to find a market for it. And generally that works really well with portrait photography because you're going straight to the consumer.
Yes.
And you're going straight to people who want a picture of them doing that thing that you do. So the shots that went viral, people were like, wanted to see themselves in those shots. And so that's when I started trying to work out how I could monetize that. And with any kind of new venture, you kind of got to start, you know, at a lower price point because you're not really sure if it's something that's going to take off or if people are really going to want to pay for it. So thinking about the prices I was charging back then, I'm kind of, you know, like I'm a little embarrassed about how cheap it was.
What were they?
Oh, I think I was doing like a half hour underwater shoots for like $100.
Wow, for that amazing work.
And it's not, you know, I'm not like a print photographer, so I'm not, you know, it's not the sort of thing where there's a sitting fee and then you charge the world for prints. I'm giving people digital files because I don't want to deal with the printing side stuff.
What about today? Is that still the case today?
Yeah, totally, yeah. Because I travel so much, I don't have a place that people can come to easily, you know, like a studio where I can do the whole emotional sell of the prints and the photography and stuff and upsell them into big prints and canvases and stuff.
But don't you have a space now? Don't you have a pool and a location where you're doing these shoots?
I do. So I do have a studio here in LA, but I still travel quite a lot. So probably half of my clientele are in different parts of the world.
Right, okay. All right, so they're paying for your vision, your insight, your skills, and they're getting a digital file in return.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So I kind of went a different model, and it's probably not as profitable as if I was selling prints. But for me, I am inherently lazy.
I love your honesty.
Yeah, I mean, I just love the path of least resistance. So if I can turn up and I can create and I can edit and then send you some files and then that's it, I'm more than happy to do that.
So what would it cost if I was traveling to the States and I wanted Brett Stanley to photograph me underwater with my wife, for example?
Yeah, so my cheapest package at my studio here is $5.99, and that's for an hour photo shoot. And that includes, I think it's 4 digital photos.
Okay, so that still sounds cheap to me.
It is cheap because there's not a lot to it. So if you want a makeup artist, then that's an extra $150. But the effort involved for me to put that together is not huge. So for that $5.99, we're talking, you know, just a white background, just the pool background. I've only got to edit 4 photos. If you want more, they're $75 each.
Right, okay. So there's room to move. There's room to grow.
Exactly. And that's where I kind of upsell people is. My kind of thing is that underwater is so chaotic and it's hard to predict and it's hard to know. Well, it's hard to guarantee we're going to get good shots of someone. If you're in a dry studio and you've got people coming in who've never been in front of a camera properly before, you know, there's tricks and ways that you can get some nice shots of them. But if you're also underwater and they're trying to hold their breath and they're trying to not die and look good, then you're already behind the eight ball again.
Yes.
So for me, I would rather charge a lower price point and tell them, you know, I guarantee we'll get 4 good shots of you. We may not get more, but we probably will get a lot more. And I would rather them go into it knowing that they've got the choice to pay more money afterwards.
Sure. Okay. So it's almost like you're putting less pressure on yourself to get what the client wants.
Yeah, exactly. And the other side of it is it's a little bit of a ploy for me to say it's not as expensive as it seems, but I know you're going to love a lot of these photos afterwards. So it's kind of like that print model, actually, now that I think about it. Whereas once they see the photos, that emotional side of them kicks in and they start buying things that they hadn't planned to.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, what we all rely on as domestic photographers, don't we? I mean,
yeah.
We want to play to those emotions because we've done an amazing job for the client and given them a great experience.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is that I would rather be working. I could push my prices up and I'd get less people less often but the same amount of money. But I also love what I create. So I'm in this middle ground of not wanting to work too hard, but I also want to be creating. I don't want to do like, you know, the bespoke kind of 2-3 grand photo shoots for the, you know, that come along like every couple of months.
Yeah, sure. So how many shoots are you doing these days?
Well, so I have two different ways that I do my shoots. So one is just that very studio-based. So someone will book a shoot and it's either an hour or a couple of hours. And that'll be me for the day. So, you know, I kind of do 1 or 2 or 3 of those a month. But the other thing that I do is, and I've never come up with a good term for this, but it's basically a photo shoot day. And I call them group photo shoots. But it's basically I will set aside a day and let people book hour-long slots in that day. So I've got Halloween coming up next month. And so on the 4th and 5th of October here in LA, I'm setting up a Halloween-themed underwater photo shoot. And so people come along and actually for about the same kind of prices I'm charging for my private shoots, they come along and they book an hour slot and it's everyone on that one day. So I'll do up to maybe 10 people a day.
Wow, okay.
And just sort of pack them all in. And for me, I'd rather work my ass off for 2 full days than spread that out over a month.
Sure. Okay, so these are themed underwater shoots to coincide with things that are happening in the year, in the world, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And not always themed. So this is kind of the model I came up with to start with. So when I first started this underwater kind of journey, I didn't have a pool of my own, so I had to rent a pool. And the only way I could make that financially viable was to have more than one person pay to come. So I'd be renting a pool for like $100 an hour or whatever, and I'd be doing half-hour shoots in there. So I'd be kind of more than covering the cost of the pool, but the more I did, the more I earned as well. I'm already set up with the pool and all the equipment's already set up, then I'd rather shoot for the next 8 hours than have to come back and set it up for an hour.
Yes, yeah, I totally understand that.
And so what I would do is I would book that pool out, and then I think when I first started, it was 15-minute slots, which now I look back at that and I'm like, how the hell did I get any good shots out of people? But they were the ones that went viral. They were the ones that kind of got me to where I am now. And so, yes, I would be traveling between the States and New Zealand and setting up these days wherever I was at the other end. And I would just work my ass off for a day, and then I would kind of chill out for the rest of the time and then edit and all that sort of stuff. And then people started kind of in other places around the world wanting to do that. And so then I'd find a pool in that area. And if I could guarantee a certain number of bookings, then it would be financially viable for me to fly to Switzerland and do 2 days of shoots.
I love that. You know, everyone just perked up when you said that. Fly to Switzerland for a couple of days to do some shoots. That sounds incredible. I want to ask you about the pool and the setup a little bit in just a minute, but let's say you're organizing one of these underwater days. How do you get word out? How do people know that this is happening?
Well, to be honest, it's just social media.
So running ads or just organic?
Just organic. I've had medium success with running ads. I usually get a lot of eyeballs on it, but not very many bookings. I find the word of mouth and the people sharing on Facebook does more for me than paying for ads. I've got a pretty decent mailing list as well, but mailing list these days, I think I've got like 5,000 people on a mailing list, then it gets to maybe 1,000 people.
Right. People just aren't opening.
Aren't opening, or it's getting hit by spam filters or
right.
Stuff. So it's kind of disappearing, but the word of mouth stuff is huge. So people will, and that's mainly what because people don't particularly want prints these days. They're wanting to post their stuff online. So then the amount of times I get people asking me for prints, I can, you know, it's like one hand, but people wanting to post their stuff on social media. And then my logo is on that picture. And so people see my name and start to associate it with those kind of photos.
So hang on, are you putting watermarks on every file that the client gets, or is this only for the low res shareable ones?
Just the low res, yes. So I'll give them a high res print version, print quality files with no watermarks. And then I'll just give them a web sized version that has my watermark on it. And they're welcome to use it. They don't have to use it. They don't even have to tag me in photos. I mean, they're paying me anyway. But most people will tag me because at this point they're happy to say who they shot with. And that kind of still weeds me out that I've got this.
That's nice. That's special.
Yeah, it is. And like I'm a reasonably introverted person, but having people kind of know who you are and want to go, man, I just shot with Brett Stanley. It was amazing. And I'm like, oh, are you talking about me? This is crazy.
Well, that is so cool. Well, that's the holy grail, isn't it? Having recognizable work.
Yeah. And so that was the other reason why I focused on underwater so much once I got into it, was it was the first style of photography that I really felt like I was really good at it, that I felt like I had kind of nailed it. Everything else that I would do, I was never totally happy with it, or I'd see other people's work and mine wasn't up to the same kind of level. And I think just by virtue of being an underwater photographer, there's less people out there doing it. So I can feel like I rise to the top a little easier maybe.
Nice. So did you look at and follow other underwater photographers?
Yeah, I did. So I'm quite a visual person. Obviously, I'm a photographer, but I'm terrible with people's names, but I know their work. And so when I first got into it, you know, I'd be Googling all sorts of people and kind of following work and trying to work out how they did it and seeing some work that I thought I really don't want to do that and other ones where I'm like, how the hell did they even do that? And so for me, it was that puzzle solving thing where I kind of looked at this work and went, how can I make that my own? And actually, how do I pull that off?
Right, which you've done. successfully.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Let me bring you back to the word of mouth thing. So let's say you're wanting to go to Switzerland, using your example, and you want to go and do some shooting there. How do you get word out in Switzerland that you're going to be there for a couple of days, and which dates, and how to book? Is that word of mouth too?
It is to a point. I mean, there is a bit of legwork that needs to be done, and it depends where I'm going to. If I'm going to somewhere like new and no one has really asked me to go there, then getting the word out in that region is pretty hard. One thing that is good is Facebook groups. So you can go to like photographers groups and models and makeup artists for say Switzerland or like Zurich and post some stuff in there. And that will start to get people noticing and wondering how they can work with you. Two things with that is that one is a lot of these groups don't like you posting advertising stuff or asking people to pay to shoot with you. It's more about the trade TFP kind of photography. So you've got to be very subtle, not go in there saying, "Hi, I'm coming to town, you can book with me." So there's a little bit of an art of just kind of dropping photos in and not really, you know, kind of surreptitiously trying to get the attention. And the other thing I've found is that most people who consider themselves models don't want to pay for photos.
Yes.
So it's a little hard where you get in there and you might get, you know, you might get 100 people saying, "I want to shoot with you," and only one of them will actually want to pay. So it's a matter of trying to build up on that buzz somehow.
Okay. So I imagine then, if I was in Switzerland and my wife loved your work, I got in contact and said, "Listen, if you ever come out here, we'd love to book you." And then I imagine you would say to me, "Well, if you can get a few friends that want to do this and then rely on me to do the sharing," would that play out like that?
Yeah, exactly. So there's a few versions of that I've done over the years. And one is that, yeah, if someone contacts me and they say they're in like the pole dancing community or they're in cosplay, then they'll be more than happy to share that around to be able to get the opportunity to work with you. So, and generally I'll say, you know, I need 8 people to be able to make this work. And they'll go, "Okay, we'll put the word out and hopefully get that many people."
Right. So let's say word's out there and I'm interested. Do I go to a booking form? Do I email you? Like, what happens? How do you actually get these shoots booked?
Yeah. So generally what I'll do is, if it's a thing, so there's two ways I can do it. So one way is that if your wife and her friends wanted to shoot and it was just totally private, it was just going to say it's going to be at your house and you had a pool, then it would just be her getting all her friends' email addresses and sending to me and then basically dealing with them directly that way. If it was something that where there's a lot of random people, so it's just a group of cosplayers who in a city, then I'll basically build a web page for that event and then get them to share that. And then people just contact me directly through that web page, usually via email. And then with that email process, then that's when I kind of work out what they want to do and kind of share all the details of stuff. I haven't really done any like booking system stuff, just because a lot of the time shoots can kind of change the parameters a little bit. It's not like a, you know, hard and fast 1 hour, 1 hour, 1 hour. Sometimes someone wants 2 hours. So I haven't found a booking system that I've wanted to use that, or that I thought would make my life any easier than just doing the emails.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine there's probably quite a bit of individual back and forth working out costumes, what to wear,
yeah,
how to get ready for the shoot.
Exactly. And there's a lot of questions, especially with so someone like cosplayers, you know, they're trying to work out whether their outfit's even going to work underwater. With pole dancers, you know, like it's, can I do it if I can't swim?
Wow, you get that question.
Yeah, and I actually work with quite a lot of people who can't swim and get amazing photos out of them. It's really, really incredible.
So should I imagine or guess that you're shooting in the shallow end of the pool then?
Not necessarily, no. So I remember one of the first times I encountered someone who couldn't swim, we were doing, it was a pole dancing underwater shoot, and we were in Wellington, New Zealand. And I rented the local public pool and it's 5 meters deep.
Wow. You're not touching the bottom there.
No, not at all. And so I basically had to, she wasn't scared of the water. She just couldn't swim. So I got her on my back. I swam her out to the pole. She held onto that pole with like for dear life, did some poses and stuff. And then I'd pick her up and swim her back to the side again. It's incredible.
Unbelievable. Well, I'm looking forward to sharing and seeing some of these images with the listener. Let me take you back a little bit to the business stuff before we dive deep into the pool stuff. Let's say you do a photo shoot for my wife, Linda, and her friends, for example. What happens after the shoot? Do you pick the favorites? Do we pick the favorites?
Yeah. So being quite a lazy photographer, I hate choosing the final images. And so what I do is I'll take all the photos from the day. I'll go through them once and get rid of all the duds. So all the ones that are just terrible shots and ones that I just wouldn't want anyone to choose. I get rid of all those. And then the leftover ones, which is probably about 50 to 75% of them, I'll then upload to an online gallery and send out an email to them. And then they can choose the ones they want me to edit.
Right. What are you using for that gallery software?
It's Zenfolio.
Oh, yep. I know Zenfolio. Okay. So they log in there. Is it a private gallery for them?
Yeah.
Right. And they choose their favorites.
Yeah. So they go through and choose their favorites. And that's kind of, that's when the emotional stuff kicks in, because generally they're like, okay, I hate all of these because I look terrible. So I'll just choose the four or the five that are in my package and so, yeah, and get it over and done with. Or they're totally blown away with how they did and they'll choose, you know, like 10 or 15 and start asking me for bulk pricing and all that sort of stuff.
Nice.
So it's a real kind of, you can never tell what someone's going to be like.
Premium members of PhotoBiz Exposed hear more of the best photography business strategies from every guest.
I'm looking at your work, mate. It's absolutely phenomenal. You're super talented at what you do. It's just amazing. Do you teach any of this stuff to other photographers?
I haven't done a lot. I'm starting to. I'm kind of putting a workshop together here in LA, and I'm talking to some people about doing an online course. But it's still very early days, and I kind of love the shooting too much at this point to be teaching too much.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you ever open up to one-on-one mentoring or things like, you have to let me know, or if your course gets up and running, let me know, because I know the listener would be super interested.
Yeah, well, that actually, now that you say that, I do one-on-one coaching. So that's something I do. And I find that a lot easier because it's one-on-one. You don't have to kind of have a curriculum. You can kind of just kind of customize it to that person's ability and what they want to learn. I'm trying to get, you know, sort of the more the group workshops happening. I think that'll probably be more next year.
Sure. Well, let me get some details once we finish the call about that, and then I can pass those on to the listener. And I know people will definitely be interested in that. And when you get the other stuff going, let me know about that too.
Yeah.
In the meantime, where is the best place for the listener to see your work and get an idea of what you do or more about you?
Probably Instagram, actually. That's kind of where I update the most. And it's kind of the photographer's business card these days. So Instagram is just Brett S. Photo, all spelled normally. And my website, which is just brettstanley.com. So I don't update there as much, but that's kind of got some good photography. And I'm getting more into motion work, so I'm doing a lot more filming. So my showreel and stuff's up there as well.
Right. I'm looking at your Instagram now, mate. It's incredible. You're amazing.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah.
They're amazing. Look, this has been a real pleasure for me, Brett. And look, before I do let you go, I have to say a massive thanks to Katie Roberto, who threw your name to me and said, you have to get Brett on. He's incredible. And I'm so glad that Katie did that. And I chased you up and you agreed to do this. So made a massive thanks. Thanks to you.
Yeah. Thanks, Katie.
And thanks to you, Brett. It's been a pleasure, mate. It really has.
No, you too. It's nice to kind of just chat, and it's nice to hear a normal accent for a change.
That might offend a few of the US listeners. I love it. Thanks, Brett.
Thanks, man.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Brett as much as I did. Brett, if you're listening, again, mate, thank you so much for coming on and sharing everything you did, for being so open and candid about your business, the way you shoot, your tips and tricks. I learned a ton. I know the listener will have as well, and I know that they will appreciate everything that you had to share. So thank you again, mate. For you, the listener, if you want to see some incredible examples of Brett's work, I've got links to anything and everything that he mentioned in the show notes for today's episode. I've also got examples of some of his work in those show notes. It's all there in that one spot at photobizx.com/332. Now, at the bottom of those show notes, there's a comments area. So if you do have a follow-up question for Brett, if there's something that I didn't ask that you wish that I did, by all means, use that comment area. I'll let Brett know that you've asked a question and I'm sure he'll be delighted to come back and answer those. If, however, you are a premium member, I'll be adding Brett into the members' Facebook group. So you'll have easy access to him there. You can tag him if you have a follow-up question, or if you just want to say thanks for coming on and sharing what you did. I know that Brett would absolutely love to read those comments as well. Also, a big thanks again to Katie Roberto for recommending Brett for this interview. If you are wanting to hear from a particular guest on the show, if you want to hear about a particular genre, if there's a particular subject that you would like to hear covered on the show, please let me know. Shoot me an email. It's andrew@photobizx.com. Let me know who you want to hear on the show, what topics you want covered in more detail, or if there's a particular genre you feel is being neglected. Let me know. Give me your feedback, and I will be happy to look into those suggestions, those ideas, and incorporate them into the podcast if I feel they're a good fit and they're going to benefit you and other listeners. Alrighty, that is it for this episode of the podcast. I hope you have a fantastic week, and I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.
If you have enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.